We don't know anything about rugby, don't talk.
Cregan. Drop goal from Larkham.
It's Australian 3-4. They've got the advantage.
Worst press conference. Well done, boys.
Hello and welcome to Green and Gold Rugby's Talking Team podcast for round 6 of Super Rugby. My name's Sully and I'll be hosting this week. Today we'll run through all the team news for this week's upcoming clashes and make our fearless predictions and discuss the topics that's grabbed our attention at Shouting at Clouds. But first, joining me this week was supposed to be Carl, but he's having technical issues and may join us later. But Yowie from the Green and Gold Rugby is with me now from the newsroom. Yowie, how you going, mate?
Not too bad. Good to be here.
It's great to have you, mate. What was your highlight from last week's rugby?
I thought Drua v Tars was absolutely brilliant. I mean, fantastic atmosphere at the stadium. Lots of tries, lots of fantastic movement. I mean, as much as I'm not a fan of Golden Point, you know, a drop goal shootout. And of course, the right team won.
Yeah, no, it was special. I loved it. I watched the whole thing and it was a great atmosphere. It was brilliant. My highlight from last weekend was, I've got Carl trying to get in. My highlight from last weekend was watching the Brumbies just click into top gear and play the rugby that we all know that they've been able to play for ages. Like round 4, they were pretty average for half a game and sort of came good in the second half. Last week, they were on their game and it was brilliant to watch.
Hopefully they don't bring that form to Suncorp Stadium this week.
Yeah. I know, and hopefully the Reds don't bring their form from last week to Suncorp as well. But we'll see how it goes. On to the matches. So the first match of the weekend is Friday afternoon at 5 p.m. daylight time. Crusaders and Chiefs. The Crusaders have lost David Havili at inside centre to injury, and they've brought Dallas McLeod in, and at lock Quinton Strain is returning from a neck strain. I don't want to say that too quick. For the Chief, they've rested Damon McKenzie for his all-back compulsory 2-match stand-down. So this is the first game of that. And they brought Josh Jacom in at 10. Semapeni Finau is also sitting out on all-back rest. And they brought in Nia Tau Koi at 6, and Anton Leonard Browns is back out at outside centre after recovering from concussion. I can't see this going any other way than the Chiefs winning this with the form, even though the Crusaders have been going better and are slowly getting players back, but David Havili is a big loss at inside centre. What's your thoughts, Yowie?
Yeah, I think until the Crusaders prove otherwise, you've got to keep tipping against them. It was interesting to see the Blues show them a lot of respect last week, taking their 3-point opportunities and so on. But and the Crusaders had a bit of bad luck, I think, in a couple of examples. But, I can't see it going any other way than the Chiefs.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that, mate. It's interesting. I saw a stat. And I put it in the group chat, the news chat, that without Damien McKenzie, with Damien McKenzie, they've scored some incredible amount of tries for. With McKenzie on the park this season, the Chiefs on the right side have combined 163-83 scoreline. And with him off the park, they are down 6-33. So,
in that case, the Chiefs are doomed.
Yes.
Can't argue with Matt.
It's a huge difference, isn't it? So see how it goes, mate. It's interesting to see how they go without him. But like that, it's part of their policy, and he has to stand out for 2 games. So this is it. Okay, next match of the weekend is Waratahs versus Rebels at Allianz Stadium in Sydney at 7:35 p.m. Australia's obsession with people with Will and Harris in their name continues, with Will Harrison back on the bench for the Waratahs. Harrison's been out for 707 days with knee injuries, so he's worked bloody hard to come back. Joining him on the bench is Lolokai Fokitti, who had that horrible neck injury in the trial against the Reds, and this is his first game back from that. Lockie Swinton moves into starting in the place of Ned Hannigan at blindside flanker, which I think is just a rotation because Hannigan's been going fantastic. Tom Ross is starting at tight head. And Hugh Sinclair is coming up off the bench into the second row, and Fergus Lee Warner is dropping out of the side completely, which I'm assuming is for Will Harrison. I'll just check that now. I'm guessing it's for Will Harrison or Ned Hannigan's the second row cover by the looks of it.
Well, they'll need cover for Lockie Swinton for when he gets carded.
Yes. Yeah, okay. Oh, no. Ned Hannigan. Yeah, I don't know what's happening with Lee Fergus Warner. For the Rebels, Josh Kameni is returning at open side flanker. Andrew Callaway has been ruled out. And Jake Strawn has taken his place at fullback, which is a big loss for the Rebels. Filippo Dargunu must have sorted through his contract problems with the Rebels. And Darby Lancaster, who's supposed to be a talent, is starting on the left wing. Your thoughts on this one, Yowie?
Yeah, I mean, the Waratahs at home and probably with a bit more proven form. Having said that, looking at the ladder, Tars 1 from 5, Rebels 2 from 5. So it'll be an interesting one.
Yeah. I'm, you've got to go with the Tars, mate. I mean, the Rebels have struggled a bit. The Tars, I hate to say the word unlucky, but they've lost some close matches. And it's, you know, I don't know how much luck has to do with that and just attitude. But the Waratahs have looked better than the Rebels for me.
Hey, guys, can you hear me now?
Yes, we can, Carl. We're just talking through the Waratahs-Rebels match.
I have been listening to you for a while, and I apologise profusely for whatever technological idiocy that has caused me to not be able to be part of this, but that's fine. Hey, it's interesting, the Waratahs and the Tars, because I know there's a, as you say, the Waratahs have been unlucky, but I think sometimes they've made their bad luck themselves. And I wonder sometimes if there's actually something in that team where they struggle under pressure. I found when I was watching the game last weekend, and I actually laughed because Gordon was sitting there yelling at the referee because the opposition halfback had thrown the ball in crooked. And then he threw his own ball into the scrum under the second row. And I think a lot of their problems have actually come from that sort of attitude where their leadership is not actually providing them the direction they need in a game. And that's where they start struggling. So when the pressure comes on in a game, their leadership is actually falling over. And because the leadership is falling over and not providing them what they need, that's actually preventing them from actually getting up when they should. I will not be surprised if the Rebels win this match. I think the Tars should win the match, and I think I've picked the Tars to win the match. But if the Rebels win this, I won't be surprised, because I think the issue that Waratahs have is that their leadership lets them down in critical times, and that affects their play.
Yeah, it seems like you can put Gordon off his game if you do something to him and put him off, you know, put him off somehow.
If I was coaching a team against the Waratahs, I would tell my lock or my flanker that in the very first line out, reach for and slap Gordon in the face, and his game would go to shit for the rest of it, because he's such an emotional player, he just can't help himself.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Carl, you're with the Rebels, maybe?
No, yeah, I'm going to pitch the Rebels for this. I think the Rebels, I actually think they've been more unlucky than the Waratahs, and I think they've certainly got the ability to take this game. They're going to miss Andrew Callaway, but I think they're going to win this.
Yeah. And you think the Waratahs?
I'd say so. I mean, just to play amateur Dr. Phil, I mean, a team like the Rebels obviously circle the wagons, everything's against us. I wonder how long-term that is as a psychological motivation versus just burning people out. But I've got no idea because I'm not in the Rebels camp.
Yeah. I'm going with the Waratahs, despite me backing him for 3 scores to win against the Ngurra last week. I'm going to stick him with them this week because they did quite well in the 100% humidity in Fiji.
That's pretty cool too.
Speaking of Fiji, the next game on Saturday at 12 p.m. in Fiji again is this week. It's the Lucky Force team to play in the heat against the Fijian Ndrua. The Fiji are welcoming back Salawa at open side and Elia Kanakayavata returns at number 8. The Force bring in Reed Princep in the 8 jersey for the concussed Will Harris, another one of the Will and Harris bunch in Australian rugby. And Sam Carter comes in on the bench as Jeremy Williams has got the captain's curse again and is out for 3 weeks with a calf injury. He's pretty unlucky once he's got the captain jersey. He's only managed one game, I think.
Yeah, it's bit of a bad luck jersey for him, isn't it?
Yeah. So is anyone against the Ndrua this weekend, Carl?
Nah, Drew have got this, mate. I think the problem with the Force is that they are absolutely able to compete well, and we saw against the Reds how well they did it against the Reds last weekend. But I think that with the passion in Fiji, the Fiji being home with their family around them, I think they're just going to be too strong for the Force on the day, and I think they'll win this match.
Yowie, you at the Drua as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Force will be expecting a cool breeze in the afternoon, and it won't be forthcoming in the Pacific.
Yeah, no Fremantle breeze in fucking Fiji, mate.
Yeah. Going off on a tangent, was Hamish Stewart the best Australian inside centre last weekend?
Yeah, no, absolutely, mate. His performance this year has actually been fantastic, and it'll be interesting to see how Fekete goes and whether those two are able to compete against each other coming back. I actually feel for your Reds, Henry, mate. I thought Henry was outstanding in the games he played. Doesn't do anything flashy, but doesn't make any mistakes in either attack or defence, and provides just a beautiful link-up for his outside backs. So I'm actually really disappointed that he's been injured, but I think that with him out, absolutely the next one on the list.
Yeah. So be interesting to see if he makes the Wallaby squad come July. So...
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going away with the Ndrua for this. I can't see them losing against the Force in Fiji. So next game at Eden Park in Auckland, which is an away game for the Blues, hilariously.
At Eden Park.
Yeah, at 2:35 p.m. is Moana Pacifica and the Blues. So Sama Malalo is starting at hooker for Pacifica. Tom Savage is back in at lock. Fine Inisi starting on the left wing, and Julian Sevilla is back in the centres. For the Blues, Rico Ioane is back at 13, and Corey Evans is this week's fullback because Zahn Sullivan, I should know that name, has done his PCL, his posterior cruciate ligament, and he's out for at least 6 to 8 weeks. So that's a bit of an owl. So, Yowie, what's your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, the Blues are pretty consistent outfit, and I think Moana Pacifica, while it's good to see some green shoots for them, they're not the complete article this season. So surely you've got to tip Blues.
Yeah. Carl?
Look, I think the Blues will win this. I have a lot of problems with the Blues. I think they've got a lot of players who remind me of that great YouTube look, because we look good on attack, and in the mirror I tend to comb my hair before someone takes a photo of me because I want to look awesome. But when it comes to the hard graft, they go missing. Interestingly, Akira has gone into the reserves this week, so he's not going to be starting, and he's one of those players that
goes missing.
Always, sorry?
He goes missing.
Yeah, he looks really, you know, he's one of those players that if he was playing against the first 15 school team, he'd look really good. But as soon as you get the senior team in the club with some hard players, he goes missing. Satutu, I think, is the same. He actually is a really good player, but he doesn't seem to step up against the hard teams. I think Moana Pacifica will see this as a game that they could win if things go their way. I just think they need too many things to go their way to actually take the game. So I'm backing the Blues to win, but I think it'll be a really close game. I don't think they're going to win by more than 3 or 4 points. Although I've been wrong before in that, so we'll see what happens. But yeah, that's what I feel.
Yep, I'm with you. I agree completely with that. And I think Moana Pacifica is a bit hot and cold. Like, 1 week they'll come out and they play great.
Absolutely.
Next week they're average. So I'm going back to Blues in that one as well. Next game is at Forsyth Bar in Dunedin at 5:05.
Hang on. We've got to find out what bloody Yowie thinks about this game, mate.
Oh, okay. I forgot. I thought
Pacifica
I'd
and Blues. Yeah. We did cover that. My comments are very forgettable.
Oh, no.
Ow.
Okay. Match of the round, probably. Highlanders versus Hurricane at Forsyth Bar at 5:05 p.m. on Saturday. The Highlanders have got Talia has been suspended for his red card last week.
Yeah.
So we've got Jonah Lowe in an outside centre. And the Hurricanes, showing amazing depth, have dropped everyone except Tyrrell Lomax, Caleb Delaney, Brad Shields, and Geordie Barrett. So I'm assuming they've gone back to their, dare I say, A team. I'm not sure if you can call it an A team, or they've got two A teams. But at 5-0, you can't complain about how they're going. So, Carl, Hurricanes are your team. So tell us how much they're going to win by.
Oh, 20 points minimum. you know, the Hurricanes are the sort of team that will come into this game 0-5, put their top players on, and somehow manage to lose. But hopefully this year they've turned that around and they won't. I think the Hurricanes are showing depth in a number of areas that they haven't shown for a long time. They've always had a really good top 15, but they've struggled with the top 23. And I think what they've demonstrated this year is that they can actually put on the field two top 23s with a lot of different players. So I think that whatever they're doing down there in Wellington at the moment seems to be working for them. I think the Highlanders are going to struggle because they're the sort of team that still relies on one or two players too much. And I think if the Hurricanes can disrupt both the play from the forwards to the back, and then disrupt that play from the halfback, then I think they're going to win this quite easily. I certainly expect them to win by 20 points. But won't be surprised if they lose by five, because that's part of being a Hurricane supporter.
Yeah, what's your thoughts on this game?
Yeah, oh, it's hard to argue with the Hurricanes' success so far. I mean, I put it down to them switching to a black jersey and the refs give them the benefit of the doubt.
Oh, God. I wonder what colour of jerseys are coming out this weekend, though.
They're playing away, so it should be the black jersey, but I think with the Highlanders at home in a dark blue, it'll be interesting which way they go.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I can't go past the Hurricanes either. I think they should do this easy. And it's so impressive that they brought that team out, that second team. I'd hate to call it a second team, but that team they brought out last week and just dismantled the Rebels. It was special.
See, it's funny. I'm okay with calling it a second team because it is, you know.
I used to like when you in my head when you say second team, it's a step down, and
it
that
is.
Seemed like it's, a step down.
Now, yeah, but you know, it's funny because I absolutely see it a step down. They're bringing in players who, you know, that Cam Roygaard is probably the best halfback in New Zealand at the moment. So when he goes off the field, the next player who comes in is second. The fact that he played really well and led a team to a good win doesn't actually change the fact that he's still number two on the list. So I don't have a problem with that. And I think that I actually think from a player's perspective, it's almost important to confirm to them that, hey, mate, you had a really good game, but this guy's still number one, and that's the level you need to play to. And if you want to be number one, you need to get to that level. Because I think that if you run down this path of saying, well, you know, it's not a number two and they're both as good as each other, you start running down the problem where someone who needs to improve starts saying, oh, well, I'm actually really good. I don't need to improve. But you know what? You just fucking do. You need to improve if you want to be number one. So I don't see it as a bad thing calling a team a B team or calling a player your second best, because I think when you tell him that, you're telling him you need to improve if you want to be number one, and you're challenging him to do that. So I'm actually okay with that, mate.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah.
Carl, you obviously don't appreciate the Australian attitude of telling players they're awesome and they can put their feet up now.
Yeah.
Oh, look,
I live off that for the next 15 years.
Yeah, well, you know, mate, I actually laugh when you say that, because I do see that so often. You know, we see a lot of players over here who are very good. Especially, I think we see a lot of players here who are very good in attack, but like Parisi is a classic example. Yeah, he's great in attack. He's a devastating player who can create space for himself, who can bust tackles, who can make ground. But you know what? When you're looking at a rugby player, and attack is not 50% of his game. Attack is 30 or 40% of his game. And the rest of his game is actually the critical bit which decides whether he's a good player or not. And I think that sometimes over here, the media think that attack is 90% of the game and the other 10% doesn't matter. And I think that a lot of players read so much about that in the media that they go down that path of thinking the same thing. And it holds a lot of players from being, a lot of players back from being a lot better than they could be if they actually realise that that attack, which they look really good in, is only actually a small part of what they need to do.
You've prompted my memory when Ewan McKenzie was in charge of the Reds. I think they culturally they brought in a thing of tackle of the week and celebrating that, just to show that, you know, really good defence is as valued as good attack. And yeah, it was novel enough to be reported in the media.
Yeah, and it's interesting because, you know, I would, and it depends on the position, you know, because I think that we need, one of the problems we have is that you actually have to look at each position separately and what is the requirement of that position. And if, and I know I'm going off track a little bit, but if we look at someone like Rico Ione playing for the Blues, now Rico is a devastating player. He's fast. He finds space. He scores a lot of tries. He actually tackles really hard one-on-one. But if you look at the requirement you have from a centre, I don't think he meets that. Because for me, a centre is a guy who creates space for the wings and the fullback to do their thing. Whereas Rico is a guy who does his thing, and then when he can't do it anymore, he gives the ball to someone else to see if they can. But at that time, he's taken up the space. He hasn't given the space. And I personally think 13 is the hardest position on the field, because you're someone who has to organise the defence, look at what the opposition is doing, set your defence up to match that, look at what they're doing in defence, and then find your attack to create, where am I going to create the space from that? And for me, Rico doesn't do that yet. And it's one of the weaknesses that I think he has that he needs to work on a hell of a lot more. But I think when we start talking about players and individual players and how good they are or how bad they are or whatever, we actually need to tie that into what we think their role is. And it's actually not whether they're actually good as a player or they have the skills or they, you know, they can run hard, they can tackle, they can pass or whatever. It's have they got the skills that their position demands? And I'm not sure the media over here sometimes recognises that as much as what they should.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry, off track a little bit.
No worries, mate. Okay, last game of the week. And I'll be heading up to Suncorp Stadium in Brisbane for this at Saturday night at 7:30 or 6:30 Queensland time. Lowly Reds against the all-conquering Brumbies. The Reds have decided to start Jeffrey Tuamunga Allen at tight end, and Zane Nongor has rotated onto the bench. Jordan Pataia has recovered from his HIA protocols and is back at 14 for Suolasi Vunivalu. Lawson Crichton is on the bench for Harry McLaughlin Phillips. I've got no info on if that's just a rotation or McLaughlin Phillips is injured. For the Brumbies, James Slipper is starting. He's been coming off the bench mostly, but starting at Loosehead. This is his 177th Super Rugby game.
What a fucking legend.
Yeah. At prop. This week he ties with Stephen Moore, who is also obviously on 177 as well.
Yeah, but Moore was a hooker, and everyone knows that's an easier gig. Just ask Nutta, mate, he'll tell you.
Lockie Lonigan is starting at hooker for Billy Pollard, and Ryan Lonigan is starting back at halfback after coming off the bench last weekend. The Reds looked off last weekend against the Force. Not taking anything away from the Force, the Force studied the Reds game and figured out how to put them off the game and did it perfectly. And the Brumbies were on fire last weekend and finally clicked into top gear as far as I'm concerned. Yowie, you're a Red supporter as well. What are your thoughts about this game this weekend?
Yeah, once again, it's hard to separate heart from head. Just to sledge the Brumbies and incur the ire of some in the comments, I mean, arguably they haven't won any really hard games yet. Although if the Reds are on song, you know, that can certainly be disproven this weekend. The Reds, hopefully it's a glitch that helps them refocus and they can do the job at home in front of what should be a good crowd.
Yeah. Oh, well, I don't know about the crowds. Like, it is Easter weekend and Brisbane pretty much empties for that.
And it's raining.
And it's raining and going to the 2K, so I'm not sure about what numbers we should be expecting. Carl's, your thoughts on the Red stumble last weekend and how they're going to go against the Brumbies?
Look, I think the good part for the Reds is that you've got a coach with the experience to understand how teams do tumble at times. It's not an indicator of anything in particular. It's just, you know, sometimes things don't click. And I think that the experience Kiss has got and what he brings to the Brumbies is something that will, or sorry, what he brings to the Reds is something that he will acknowledge that. He will look at the different things that might have caused it, and he'll bring that back on to bring them in space. I love that he's dropped Vunivalu. I personally don't think Vunivalu is good enough to be a starting wing in a club rugby game, because he has demonstrated time and time again that he doesn't understand the game of rugby. He doesn't have the personal drive to actually get off his ass and do something. And if he doesn't have the ball in hand charging ahead, he may as well be a lump of concrete sitting on the side of the fucking field. So I'm glad he's gone. The bit that really surprises me is that he's on the bench, and bench players normally cover a couple of positions. He's a guy who has demonstrated he's not good enough to be a winger. So what positions is he covering from the field? And that's the only question I have about the Reds team.
When you think about it, mate, if Pasami goes down to inside centre, you'd have to move Fluke in one, Pitaia in one, and bring onto the field. It's like a complete backline rearrange. I know.
And it goes backwards.
Numbers don't really matter except for set pieces. But that's a big switch up.
See, this is where I have a huge difference. I actually think the numbers do matter. I think that the problem we've had is that you've had people like Ben Smith, for example, who could play fullback and wing equally well. And so people think, oh, any winger can play fullback and any fullback can play winger. Or you have a guy like Bowden Barrett who plays first five and fullback and does it really well. Oh, any first five can play fullback and any fullback can play first five. And I actually think that's wrong. I think those two people and a few others like them are actually the exception. For me, and when I've played rugby for years, I've refereed rugby for 15, 20 years now, or 15 years now, I actually think that there's a huge difference between every position on the field, including things like left lock and right lock, left wing and right wing. And I think that is only the exceptional players that can play other positions very well, which makes me really question what the fuck is Vunivalu doing on the bench, because he is only useful if Pitaia gets injured. If anyone other than Pitaia gets injured, the back line is actually going to have a reduced ability, because they have to move other people out of position to accommodate him on the wing, where he's not that bloody good anyway. So I've got a few problems with that. I think the Reds should win this. I think the Reds at home, with the coach and his ability to get past the problems they had last week, I think that the Reds should win this game. But I think that a couple of injuries to the wrong people, and they're going to be so imbalanced that any good that might have happened will go backwards, and then the Brumbies will take advantage of it.
And especially since Jordan Pitaia's nickname is Wolverine, because he can't be injured.
Yeah, I think they would have been served better with maybe Tarjanan on the bench against Sedasuli. But
Hey, there we go. I mean, yeah, that's the trouble. You know, Rugby Australia pays millions of dollars for these fucking idiots who come over from Mungo land, don't understand the game. Some of them can't learn it. Some of them learn parts of it. And if you don't play them, they look like fools. So they put pressure on to play them. I'm absolutely sure that goes down.
And I know Lawson Crichton played his first season with the Reds at wing. So, it's a puzzling.
I've just got a text message from Hoss to remind everyone that Carl's views don't necessarily represent the views of Ponderosa Publishing.
I think, it's good. I think Jeff Tuamanga Allen starting for Zane Nongo is a good go as well. I mean, Zane Nongo has played a lot better this year, but I'm still not convinced that he's a dominant player. No.
Yeah, so you take it. So you take someone the Kiwis don't want. I'll just put that out there.
He's a good player. I like Jeff.
He is. And good on him for stepping up. I think it's great.
Yeah. So I'm with the Reds. Yeah, with the Reds. But you're the impartial judge, Carl. So what's your thoughts on the winner of this game?
Reds at home. I'm going with the Reds, guys. I think they'll do it.
Okay. Well, that's all the games from this weekend. So we're on to our regular segment, Shouting at Clouds, where we just mention what's been on our mind this week, mate. So, Carl, what's on your mind this week?
I think the biggest thing that's on my mind this week is where Rugby Australia starts going to from here. As I mentioned on the Gagger this morning, I don't think rock bottom's been reached yet. I think that the absolute abortion that is the board that runs Rugby Australia, the board that runs or doesn't run the TAS, and I'm not sure how that works out once they've sold their soul to Rugby Australia the way they did, that the problems that the Rebels are having, and I think that I don't think that we've seen rock bottom yet. I think that once we start moving into the international season and Rugby Australia starts looking for people to come in and sign up and be members, with everything that's happened over the last sort of couple of years, that a lot of people aren't going to be bothered. And my big thing this week is can Australia rugby actually get through this okay? I mean, we saw, I don't know if you've read it on the Raw, but there's now a spill going of Rugby Australia's board from a couple, and I'm absolutely with you, Sully, in that it seems like, you know, a bunch of people who don't have the skills or experience and now complaining at another bunch of people who don't have the skills or experience that they can do better. But are they? So my big thing shouting at the clouds at the moment is, for fuck's sake, Australian rugby, get your shit together and sort this out.
Yeah, my take on that is, except for three of these people who have called for the spill of the board, the rest of them haven't put their name or face to anything. So it's just a faceless bunch of guys saying, we don't like what you're doing, we can do it better.
Yeah.
There's no real answers there. And it's just more bad publicity for Rugby Australia.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yowie, now that Carl's spoiled my shout at clouds.
and sucked all the lighthearted atmosphere out of the room. Yeah.
What's got your goat this week, mate?
Yeah, just two sort of light things. My positive one is I quite enjoyed Mick Byrne turning up to the press conference in the Chicago Bulls hat and making reference to Darren Coleman's.
Oh, that was brilliant! Absolutely.
Yeah, it was. They had a good laugh at that. Yes.
Yeah, for anyone who missed the story, in 2022, Darren Coleman, in charge of the TARS, after beating the Drua 40-10, he sort of downplayed the excitement, said, look, we haven't beaten the Chicago Bulls here. And obviously Mick Byrne's held on to that on behalf of the Drua and return serve wearing that hat after the close game. And I just think it's great to see a bit of character and friendly sledging and that sort of thing. It makes for a more interesting week. My sort of whingy shout at clouds is about jersey colours. I'll turn on a game sometimes before knock off at work and see someone in pink playing someone in black, and I have to concentrate on the little scorecard to work out who's actually playing. At the risk of sounding old-fashioned, can we not have the team in the colours we expect them to be, or if they're away and there's a clash, a white-based jersey with sort of hints of their normal colours? It's just a little bit too wild for me to follow.
I like what the Blues did last week against the Crusaders. Crusaders were in their old-fashioned red and black hoops, which looked great. And the Blues didn't go as traditional, but they had like the bottom half of their jersey was white and the shoulder and chest were blue. And you could still tell which team was which.
Yep.
Yeah, and I thought it was done well.
Yeah, to me, I don't have so much of a problem with the colours, although the Rebels in pink, I'm a bit with you on that, Yowie, and it's like, what the fuck, are you trying to prove that you're touchy-feely and you're in touch with your environment? Which doesn't say a lot about Melbourne, to be honest, but as long as you can tell which team is which, I don't really care, to be honest.
Yeah, the Tars did it as well, I think, last week, wasn't it? But, yeah, and I wonder, I know there's protocols in World Rugby about jerseys and colour blindness, so I'm wondering what, if you're colour blind, what colour does pink come up as?
Interesting. It's interesting. I actually have a colour blind, not colour blind, I have a colour deficiency, but it's a red-green one. It was really interesting in the army because if they put the flag up on the range against the green background, I couldn't see it. So I got into trouble a few things, firing when I shouldn't and not firing when I should. But yeah, there we go.
Yeah.
Did any of the troops under your command send you out to change the targets?
That's their problem, mate. We paid paper, scissors, rank, and I won.
I'm with Carl's on my shouting at clouds this week. I've got nothing else I can think of. I'm pretty happy, actually, even though the Reds won. Won, lost, and lost, I think, badly. They really lost their mojo last weekend. I'm really hoping they get it back this weekend. Quick look at the ladder. Hurricanes are sitting comfortably on top with a whole game in hand, basically. 4 points ahead of the Chiefs, who are even with Brumbies, who have significantly improved their for and against. Blues in fourth and Reds in fifth, Highlanders in sixth, Rebels sneaking in at seventh, and Andrua at eighth. So that's the top eight. That's a pretty interesting top eight, really. Three Aussies, Fijian, and three New Zealanders. Who would have thought that would happen?
Yeah.
Does that add up to eight, Sully?
Probably not.
Sorry.
Sorry, four Kiwis, mate. Yeah.
Ouch! You know,
to be an electrician, you have to be really good at maths. Did I ever tell you that, guys? Anyway, that's about all for this week. Thanks for tuning in to Green and Gold Rugby's Talking Teams. See you back here for next week's edition. Bye for now.
See you later, team.
See ya.
If you don't know anything about rugby, don't talk.
Gregan. Drop goal from Larkham.
It's Australian 3-4. They've got the advantage.
Worst press conference. Well done, boys.